Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Dr. Amanda Gumbert, Extension Specialist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How you doing?
How is David and Vicki doing this morning?
Doing well.
If I got any better, I'd be a Vicki Shadrick. If I was doing any better.
You're going to have to come a long way.
I know. That's what I'm talking about.
To be a Vicki Shadrick.
That's what I'm talking about.
We are in the big city of Lexington, Kentucky this morning, recording a few shows for the upcoming New Year's time, and it's getting a little airish out there. They're talking about some winter storm advisories and a little snow, and it's just about Christmas time, mm-hmm. So we should have a little snow.
We was driving in this morning, and we got to we was in Lexington, and both of us kind of caught out of the corner of our eye. There was a truck with a snow plow on the front, and he said, "Now, what they got that thing out for?" or something along those lines. I said, "Well, I don't know, but I hope we don't need it." So
yeah, I'm not about all that snow.
We're actually recording this show a couple of weeks in advance of the New Year's. It'll actually, if you're listening to this, it's New Year's Day. We hope you have had a safe and eventful New Year's Eve. We hope you had a Merry Christmas before that, and happy holidays all the way around. But we get a chance to be in Lexington a few times a year and do shows like this and bring some of our specialists on. And today, the specialist we have visited with us is Amanda Gumbert. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here with us.
Thanks for having me. This is an honor.
An honor.
It is. Now I've enjoyed listening to you all.
You have nothing
really
to gain.
Thank you.
You have nothing to gain from any of us, so you can.
But we'll take the compliments.
Absolutely.
We'll take them.
No, we do appreciate that. Glad to have you on. We talked about ever since we started doing this show, we have named the people that we want on and the people we want to, and you have been one of those that we've talked about forever.
Well,
it's just now working out.
I'm glad you caught me.
Glad to get you on. We'll chase a lot of rabbits today, talking about a lot of different things. But for our guests that may or may not be associated with you and your work, talk a little bit about how long you've been with UK, what your background is, maybe where you come from, things like that.
Oh, well, so Vicki and I go way back.
That's very true.
New agent orientation and all the agent trainings that we did when we first came along. So that's been 20-plus years ago. So
A bit.
Just a couple weeks. We're new still.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
So I'm an extension specialist for water quality, and that just means that whenever y'all have questions about water issues across the state, then I'm somebody you can call on. And a lot of my work, though, is kind of multi-agency, so I work a lot with our state agencies and federal agencies. So it's predominantly focused in water quality. But also encompasses lots of other natural resource conservation stuff. So I've got a soils background, plant and soil science background. I grew up on a farm in Robertson County, smallest county in the state. I'm sure y'all know that.
Been through there.
Yep. I'm sorry if you went through there. I don't know why. You must have been lost, Jay.
No, I was on 68 and heading somewhere else.
That's true. You got cut through a tiny little corner of it. Yeah. So I am from the Blue Licks area, by the state park. So that's what I grew up doing, and then came to UK. And as some of my professors told me, I got institutionalized. Mm-hmm. So I stuck around after school and have been really, really, really blessed to have a career in extension. So I love it. I love all the people.
Pretty good place to be.
It's good, yeah. Yep. It's good.
Their extension work is different than really anything else, and we've talked about that a lot, too, on our podcast, is the work that we get to do is being able to help the people that we serve be able to kind of meet the needs, the goals that they have, and trying to help them do what they want to do and be successful. And it's, and, you know, being able to be a part of that is always rewarding. And with our extension system that we have, there's no perfect system, but ours is really good. And you talk to folks in other states about their extension, they want what we have in Kentucky. And I think a lot of that is because of the work that the agents and the specialists do. We have that that relationship to where we help each other, and together then we can help the people that we're serving out in the state. And I think that's makes it for a good career.
Yeah, I've always said, you know, I don't have to know everything. I just got to know who to call. So if I have ag water quality plans, or if I've got questions about that, if I got producers, I know who to call.
That's right.
And
that's
the great thing about our extension system is we've got a great group of specialists. They do a fantastic job. And anytime I've ever needed anything, all I had to do was call. And they step right
for sure.
up. So we've got a great system here in Kentucky for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think so too. It's been, it's really kind of changed in terms of, my subject matter, water quality. And like you said, David, ag water quality plans, that's where my work started, was educating, producers about Kentucky ag water quality plans. Our extension service played such a critical role in that initial push out of information. I know you all as agents get questions all the time. You deal with it with CAPE applications and those kind of things. But it's really been interesting to see the evolution of how our farmers view those plans, as well as conservation practices as a whole, over my career. Because, early on, environmental issues were a bit of a tough sell in some cases. They really, and I understand there was a lot of, I grew up on a farm, so I had that side of things, but I was also really interested in, being outside and hiking and natural resources. And, I remember coming into the ag college and taking some of my plant science classes, and I remember I was just elated. I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, I can make a career of this. Are you kidding me? This is amazing. but I didn't really grow up taking ag classes. I took biology classes, that kind of stuff. But it was, it's really been interesting to watch how our farmers have embraced conservation practices. I think all of our farmers have done it always. It was just kind of this perception of, don't tell me what to do. And our agencies, I think, have come a long way too, of really meeting the farmer where they need to meet them, so that things make good economic sense too. So,
I agree.
I think hit the nail on the head when you talked about, a farmer not wanting somebody to tell them what to do. Regulation, I think, in general, goes against most people's ilk. But on that same hand, I have watched that evolution, that change from the beginning of my career in the middle 90s to now when it comes to a farmer's thoughts on water quality.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did a big project in a county that I worked in before when I was in Christian County that revolved around cleaning up a watershed. And so many people were just dead set against even the thought of, well, what does it need? It doesn't need that problem. That's not a problem we have. And a farmer came to a meeting to hear all of this one day. And he had a little bit of forethought before he came, and he actually stopped, crawled up under a bridge, and went down with a couple of jars and got some water. And he had them in a little small cooler with him. And when everybody was fussing about, we don't really need this, he pulls out these two jars of water and sets them on the table. And he said, I don't know what everybody's fussing about, but evidently we have a problem. And he said, you can see it. Mm-hmm. He said, if I can see it and you can see it, imagine what's in there that we can't see.
Yeah, that's right.
And that small demonstration really started a movement in that area to work and clean up. And they've done just a tremendous amount of work over time now that a lot of people were against. I think a lot of people were against the idea of what they would find if they dug into those things.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that agriculture, like I said, that this was a farmer, the biggest thing that they were able to disprove once they went through all of this project is that agriculture was the source of the problems.
Yeah.
They had some issues, but they were able to locate them and address them and clean that up. There were other issues not related to agriculture that we uncovered, and and we're able to do something about and clean up. And it's been a big change in folks' perceptions over time.
Yeah, it has been. I mean, there's lots to say just about that project alone and all some of the things you said, Jay. But for one, if you can see a water quality problem, that's typically sediment, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not just a water quality problem. That's a problem for our farmers because that soil that they've lost from their landscape, that typically is productive soil, and that's a big problem. Just erosion itself, still a big problem. You know, even, you know, it, you know, the Dust Bowl kind of brought that to mind, but, you know, now even still a big problem. But, you know, certainly there has been fear, a lot of fear related to, oh, somebody's going to point the finger at me. Mm-hmm. And there certainly have been voices over the last 20, 30 years that have said agriculture is the culprit. But many of those voices have also been disproved, and I think that's what you're talking about, Jay. And there's several of these watershed projects that those things happen. And you, as you dig in, and this is, you know, I like watershed projects for that reason, is because we're all part of the problem. All of the ways we use our land, and that's a lot of how we try to teach our students, you know, on campus or our 4-H students or, you know, anytime I say students broadly, anytime I'm with a group of anybody who'll stand still, you know, I'm going to talk about water and soil. but, you know, we try to talk about how all of us have an impact on the land, every single one of us, everything we do. And so going in with kind of an assumption, I think we all know what that does to all of us, you know, but when we have those assumptions that this is the problem or that's the problem, that can create even bigger problems and isolation, and it makes people defensive, and it kind of breaks down those opportunities, you know, for us to all work together to solve the problem. Because most of the time when we're talking about watershed projects and we usually have a stream or river that has an, you know, an issue, it's either sediment, nutrients, or pathogens, which typically, you know, bacteria. Those are the top three in Kentucky, and we're just trying to figure out what the source is and then put some practices on the ground. It's not to get anybody in trouble. It's really just to how do we do better.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think some of the other agencies have done a really good job of kind of changing the way that they I guess maybe advertise or promote conservation practices, but also just talking to producers and it not being an authority thing that they're coming across that way. And it's more of, hey, I'm here to help you.
Right.
You know, let's work together on this so we can fix this problem because it's going to benefit you as much as anybody. And I think that has really helped. And I also have said this before, but farmers in general are very environmental friendly. Because they know the importance that that soil has for their livelihood, their farm, water quality. It just keeps going and going and going. They know that. And they want to do what needs to be done because they know long term, that's how they're going to stay in business.
Yeah, that's right. I totally agree with that. You know, and one of the ways that we've changed some of our work within Extension also is to thinking about watershed projects is involving farmers on the front end and farmer leaders and encouraging farmer leaders to get involved. And, you know, we ask farmers to be leaders in all kinds of things, right? I mean, and, you know, there's only so much time they've got. But, you know, that's something that we've really looked to is engaging with farmer leaders early on, helping them learn more about their local watershed, you know, which stream flows into what, and most of them know that already, but, you know, where sources of pollution might be coming from and what maps and tools we got available. But also having some of those farmer leaders mentor younger farmers, not just about production and production goals, but conservation goals. And so that, you know, also, you know, some of the stuff we were trying to do is have farmers mentor farmers focused on conservation and let them talk to each other. You know, sometimes an extension, I think, and it's taken a while for me to learn this too, is some of the best things that we can do is get the right people in the room and then kind of step away and let them talk to each other.
Talking about that change in perception, that's another change that I have seen visibly from a lot of the producers that I've worked with through the years, is that want or need to be involved. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have said, you know, in the early days, it was easy to sit on the outside, on the sidelines and watch. But the want or the need for producers to actually get involved and spearhead some of these projects, I think, is key. Well, it gets them around the table and gets them, you know, interacting with some of these different agency personnel that they both really have the same interest in mind. They've just never got together and had those conversations.
And I think the reason a lot of that happening is because we've got that need to tell our own story. Sure. Because we doggone sure don't want somebody else telling it.
Yeah.
So we want to get in there and tell the actual story or the truth. And I think that has spurred a lot of folks, a lot of farmers, to get involved in a lot of those different things because they want to tell the truth. They want it to be right. You know, 95-98% of our farmers, great conservationists, do the right thing every time. There is a small percentage of folks that don't, but that's, I don't care what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. There's a small percentage of folks that are not going to do right. It doesn't make any difference.
Right.
That's right.
But, you know, but we've got to tell our own story, and we've got to get involved in those and mentor those younger people and get them to bringing those folks along and getting actively involved in all those organizations.
You know, I'll tell a little bit of the backstory that highlights the need for exactly what you're saying, David, for producers to get involved, for younger people to get involved. The Watershed Project, without being specific, the Watershed Project that I had a lot of experience with through the years, all started because a producer was on a congressional tour, I can't talk today, in Washington, and a senator staffer was talking to him about issues in the state of Kentucky. And he threw a map up for everybody to see with some what they considered impaired watersheds. And the guy looked at this dot on the map, and he said, that's my backyard. Mm-hmm. And he started asking questions. Well, it's impaired. Well, what's it impaired with? Well, it's impaired. But that started somebody into digging, into seeing what was going on and what was impaired, what exactly was impairing it. And there's been a lot of work done since then to help and involve and clean that up. Mm-hmm. But it all started with somebody seeing the dot on a map in Washington. And they started asking questions.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's interesting.
And there's been plenty of involvement since then.
Yeah. Yep, there has been. That's true. That is
absolutely
true.
Absolutely. Well, Amanda, talk to our listeners a little bit maybe about what's involved in the Ag Water Quality Plan. It's really not that big a deal to fill it out anymore and where they can find it maybe to fill out. I know it's online now.
Right. So we've got several different tools, and those of us who've been around, we know there's been several iterations of it. So it's the Ag Water Quality Act was passed in 1994. And it became law in 2001. And so for those who don't know, it just means if you have 10 acres or more involved in agriculture, you need a Kentucky Ag Water Quality Plan. And what it is, it's just a list of best management practices that you're using on your farm to protect water quality. And so it doesn't have to be anything fancy. Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of updated tools available. The state of Kentucky hosts the online tool now. You can access that by going to the Kentucky Division of Water or Kentucky Division of Conservation's websites, and you can find a link there. There, unfortunately, it is not an easy, you know, short little link for me to say, so we're not even going to fool with
right.
that. We can put
I'm
that a link in the show notes if you've got those.
Absolutely.
But you can also always encourage our farmers to either come to the Extension office or go to their local Conservation District office, because there are folks there at either of those offices who can help direct you to the plan and how to do it. There is so predominantly we prefer that farmers do their plan online. It's just like anything we do online. You create a user ID and password and that kind of thing, and then you enter your information online about your farm. And then also you start to answer questions about your operation. And that helps you as the farmer determine which practices you want to use. I will say there is a paper version also. There's a PDF that you can print out. You can do it by hand. I know some of our farmers don't want to fool with doing something else online. I don't blame them. There's sometimes you get screen fatigue. But you can do it on paper. Just make sure you get the most up-to-date version. That's always kind of been a challenge for us. As we update the plan and update the resources, things get outdated. But anyway, it's, you know, there are six sections of the Ag Water Quality Plan, and you just go through and answer questions about your operation. I like to give an example about the livestock section. It's the most relatable, I think, to most of our producers. You know, a lot of the practices in there are common sense practices and practices that we get recommendations for from other specialists too. So for instance, rotational grazing. We've probably talked about rotational grazing at every cattle meeting we've ever had in the last 15, 20 years. And that is an Ag Water Quality Plan practice. So if you're using rotational grazing, that's also a conservation practice because you don't overgraze your pastures, you don't have bare soil, you're keeping your cattle away from water resources or limiting their access. So those are common sense pieces and parts in there. From a crop perspective, crop rotations, that's a conservation practice in the plan, as well as nutrient management. So soil testing, you know, making sure that you've got the nutrients that you need for the crop you want to grow without putting too much on. So those are just some pretty straightforward examples of, of practices that also make good economic sense.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to go through and kind of file through and get and give that information. I've actually talked a producer or two through it over on the phone. You know, and he says, I'm looking at it, you know, he's
I've done that a time or two.
So I mean it's fairly simple. It's just getting to it is sometimes a little challenging, but you know, it's a really good document that I think a lot of having the CAPE program and some of these other programs that force is not the word, but
encourages that's right encourages.
Producers to you know, to fill that out has gotten folks very comfortable with filling it out, and I think it's a comfort thing. You know, if you're that's no big deal, I can get it done in 10 minutes. I mean, so it's not a big deal. So
yeah, and I will say yes, I agree with that. That yes, it isn't a big deal, and it can also be used as a planning tool.
Sure.
And so I try to hesitate to, you know, to tell producers that, oh, well, just hurry up and get that done. It'll take you 10 minutes. Yes, it may take you 10 minutes. And if you take a few extra minutes and really think through the questions it's asking you, you can kind of take a holistic view of your farm and just like relax for a minute, exhale, and then go, huh. Maybe this isn't working. You know, where do I have erosion over and over? Where am I having trouble in the winter when I'm winter feeding and I may get a tractor stuck or I'm scared? I will tell a story. I do remember as a kid riding on the back of the tractor when we go out to – we fed square bale hay to the cattle and, you know, we would be – the kids would be piled up, you know, with the hay bales and the buckets of corn on the back. And we'd be driving out the farm road, and there was always a slick spot that you just held your breath and hope you didn't fall off the back of the carryall, you know. And so those are kind of the things to think about. Even when you're out on the tractor, when you're out in the field, you know, what are the problem areas that you're seeing that are troublesome? And then figure out, hey, maybe there's a conservation practice that will help me fix this muddy issue or a runoff issue or something like that.
Oh, definitely. I think that's exactly right. I mean, and you can think about a different practice that you may can do. You know, you were talking about the feeding, you know, maybe you need to be doing bale grazing or maybe you need to be doing, you know, unrolling hay or something like that to keep from having those spots.
That's right.
That you're having the runoff of, you know, during that year. So, I mean, there's lots of things, and you're right. You know, it's not any trouble to figure it out and to get it filled out, but maybe a good time to take account of what you're doing, and maybe there are some things you need to change, that's for sure.
And I think, too, once you have that water quality plan in place, I mean, go back and look at it and use that, too, to keep some records about
it. Just don't look at it once.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and really, to like you said, it's a planning tool when you're doing it, and then to maybe go back and visit again, because maybe this area is better, and making a note on that this is kind of what I did, and it really improved this, because chances are somewhere down the line somebody's going to be talking to you and say, man, I've got this one problem it's just always a problem, and then you can say, well, look, this is what I did and it really helped. So I think that's a way too to help others, and I think it just even though you know your farm forward and backward, I mean, when you have a farm, you know it. But sometimes when you're reading through something, it just causes you to think about it in just a little bit different way than what you would have otherwise.
That's right.
Honestly, I think that's the best part about the Ag Water Quality Plan. If we go back to the very beginning in those early days, my early days of extension, it was a workbook. And answering those questions was the easiest part of it. But when you answer those questions, whether it's yes or no, typically the yes questions are going to refer you to a list of best management practices. Go through and read those, because those are the ones that you need to implement. Those are the things that you need to actually do to help alleviate the potential issue that you may have from that particular practice. There's never one best management practice. It's not a thou shalt do this. Right. There's always a list of three or four things, and that's where you'll find those options that may work better for you than other things.
That's true. The other thing I always encourage folks to do is, you know, if you're doing it for CAPE, well, how about thinking about what your next CAPE application is going to be? What next practice?
That's a good idea.
Or is it state cost share? Or maybe you want to, you know, try to utilize EQIP from, you know, NRCS or another NRCS program to get cost share. So using this as kind of a stepwise method to get toward improvement on the farm.
That's kind
of
really
kind of like
advice.
A gateway.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
Good advice.
And too, on the conservation practices, I can't talk either, Jay.
What y'all been drinking?
I don't know. Did somebody put something in my cup?
They got a lot of cups over there.
I guess something. The big cups over here.
The big gulps.
Yeah. But one of the things, too, is if you put some practices in place, let's just say a grassed waterway. I know that's one that's been around for a long time. But they're still very viable. They're still very useful. Watch those, because especially in a grain system, when you're spraying, you're going to get a little closer each time, and before you know it, your grass waterway is almost gone.
Yeah, or is gone.
That's right.
And so kind of keep an eye on those practices that you put in and maintain those.
Yeah, that's really good advice, Vicki, because they're not just put them in and walk away. Yeah. You know, maintenance kind of gets us coming and going on a lot of different things. We think we could do this. We put a lot of energy into doing one activity or event or practice, and then we think, check, that's done. But you're right, maintenance is required. And I will say a lot of these practices have a lifespan. Mm-hmm. You know, many of them, if you go into a contract with state cost share or the federal programs with NRCS, they have a lifespan of the practice. So, you know, kind of keep that in mind, too. Is it a 10 to 15-year practice? That probably means somewhere in that time frame you're going to need to do some upkeep, or you're going to need to inspect, or kind of, you know, take a fresh look at it. Mm-hmm. We recommend that you don't wait that long to look at your ag water quality plan. I like folks to look at it every year or two. Yeah. I know that's asking a lot for some people. I see the looks on our farmers' faces when I say every 2 years, and they kind of, you know, they avert their eyes.
Don't make eye contact.
Yeah, she doesn't.
She's
She can't see my filing system. I'm like, I just know what my dad's filing system used to look like. It was a stack of papers with a brick on top.
And so I
know where in that stack some of these ag water quality plans are.
It's in there somewhere.
But it may be pretty far down.
Amanda, I've got a two-part question here for you, and one kindly sets up the other. When we talk about ag water quality plans, we're talking a lot about producers, but we know producers work a lot on rented ground or maybe shared use ground. Who ultimately is responsible for implementing this ag water quality plan? Is it the farmer? Is it the landowner?
That's a good question, Jay, and it sometimes it depends. By the letter of the law, the landowner is ultimately responsible. So that just means that if Division of Water comes out for some sort of inspection or a complaint is filed, ultimately the landowner is responsible for kind of answering to that. But when you talk to Division of Water, they're going to tell you that, you know, if there's an operator here and they're responsible for the day-to-day and they're renting the land and they're doing all the work, that's who they want to talk to. So whoever's really doing the work day-to-day on the land needs to know. So I always recommend that in an ideal world, the landowner and the operator work together to develop the plan. Now, in reality, probably one or the other is going to do it, but they both need to know what's in the plan, and they both need to have a strategy for who's going to do what. And, you know, in situations where you're an absentee landowner, that absentee landowner may not know anything about the Ag Water Quality Act or know they need a plan. So we sometimes would lean on that operator to be compliant and to be the one kind of walking through the planning on there. And so when you're doing the plan online, also there's a place for the name of the owner and the name of the operator.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a really great question, Jay. I've gotten that a lot. I've done programs where I've had farmers come in and we just spend the evening working through ag water quality plans. And that was when we would print off some of the documents. And I had one farmer once who came in and she said, you know, we're renting ground from six or seven different landowners. And she took six or seven of them. She's like, we'll just develop the plan for each one of them, and then we'll go talk to the landowner.
So I asked that first question, and that's exactly the answer that I was fishing for, if you will.
Yeah.
I asked that question specifically to introduce a topic that sometimes falls outside the purview of ag water quality plans, and that's silviculture across the state. We have a lot of folks who may not own a farm. They may be just like me, and they own that's trees, that's timber for you people that are wondering, meaning David and Vicky.
I was with you,
just
Jay.
Trying to use them big words is all I said.
We have folks like me who own a timber farm. They own a tree farm, and maybe once every 30 or 40 years somebody is going to come in and harvest timber off that operation. It's still deserving of an ag water quality plan, but oftentimes those folks are far removed from any of that discussion.
That's right. Yeah.
So how do we promote that idea as far as completion of ag water quality plans, both by landowners and by loggers working together?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, I look at it a couple different ways. So, yes, we have a silviculture or a forestry section in the Ag Water Quality Plan. And, you know, we'll tell producers to go through there, look at the questions, see if there's a question in there that applies to them. If they're not actively logging, then oftentimes they, you know, some of those practices don't apply. I will say there is one practice in the silviculture section that applies to a lot of our producers, and that practice is sinkhole protection. For whatever reason, sinkholes are only addressed in one BMP, and that is in the silviculture section. So as producers are working through the livestock and the crops section, you may see a BMP pop in that is silviculture, and it's only because it's a reference to sinkholes. But back to your original question, you know, I still encourage all of our woodland owners, you know, the Kentucky Woodland Owners Association is a very active group, and I have worked with them a lot in the past. Many of them are doing conservation practices on their land. But when you have an active harvesting operation, you need to have a master logger on site, because some of those forestry water quality regulations are even stricter than what's laid out in the Ag Water Quality Plan. So I kind of veer people toward Kentucky Division of Forestry, and also having, you know, you've got to have a master logger on site when you're having a logging situation. It's a critical element of it. We encourage folks to have forest stewardship plans. You know, many, many, many of our landowners have both. They've got a beef herd, or they've got row crop, and they've got woodland that they may or may not actively manage. And I'm going to tell you, our forestry extension team is very active and very critical to pushing forward this idea of managing our woodlands in Kentucky, because I mean, as y'all know, we're 49% forested. So a lot of trees in the state. So
you mentioned sinkhole management. That was not the one that I was thinking of immediately, but I do know where that's listed. Some of the big things that I think about, especially through woods, whether you're actively logging or not, two things come to mind for me. One is stream crossings,
because a lot
of those take place in the woods. The other is just road management, maintaining those roads, putting in water bars or anything that might help prevent erosion in a road.
Yeah, absolutely. Water bars are really important for that. You know, I've even talked to a lot of landowners who put in water bars mainly just to maintain their road and not have their gravel wash out. It's certainly a water quality practice, but also you're going to maintain, you know, an asset that you have on your farm too, and make your farm more accessible. And when your farm's more accessible, you're more likely to manage it and manage for, you know, things that, and I think about invasive species in our woodlands, because it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. And if you don't get back there to the back 40, back 50, back however many, you know, acres you've got, those are some of the things that can creep in. And from a natural resources perspective and management of, you know, the overall value of our land, that's one thing that can be really important. But yeah, absolutely, having the water bars in place, very, very important.
So if you were to be listening to this and you've got woodlands, whether you're actively managing, I'll get it out here in a second.
That
I promise,
big cup.
There is
that
nothing
big cup. But, what's in that big cup over there?
I think he tripped over silviculture.
Yeah,
nothing but tea in this cup, I promise. If you, whether or not you're managing your woodlands or not, invest the time into looking at ag water quality plans or a forestry stewardship program to make sure that you're managing that resource just like you are the rest of your farm.
And if you own a farm, but you have somebody leasing that farm, who's responsible for actually going in and doing the water quality plan? I mean, like, is that something that the producer needs to do that's leasing that, or does the landowner need to do that?
I think there's either one. There's really not a hard and fast rule on that. It just somebody needs to be the point person, because like I mentioned before, if there is a complaint, and that is the way the ag water quality plan is enforced, there really is no other way to enforce it other than a complaint driven situation. And so if there is a complaint that's filed, and that always goes to the Kentucky Division of Water, they're the water quality enforcement arm of state government, if that complaint goes in, Division of Water has to follow up on it. There is a corrective measures process, which means that if there is a problem, there are resources to help a farmer fix the problem, as long as they've made their best effort to have ag water quality practices on their land. And so, you know, typically it is the landowner, but if it's an operator who is dealing with an absentee landowner, then the operator ought to go in to the conservation district, or they can go online, then they can file it. I mean, you don't have to go into an office. It's just there's always added benefit, I think, when you go into an office, because when somebody steps into your all's office, they're exposed to all the programs that Extension offers.
Right.
If they go into the conservation district, they're exposed to all of the conservation programs available. There's not a hard and fast rule, just somebody do it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes what happens is everybody thinks that the other person's done it.
Yeah. And it's not done at
all. And it isn't done at all. Yeah. That's right.
And that's a reason to have a good relationship with your renter or with your landowner, so that you can know if they're not going to do it, you need to go do it. You know,
that's right.
One of them kind of deals. But, you know, that's another, if you've got that really good working relationship with your renter or with your landowner, that is always a plus that you can sit down and talk about that. And I don't know, as this doesn't need to be maybe in the lease, you know, that folks need to think about putting that in the lease and you know, who's going to take care of the ag water quality plan.
That's a really good point.
I was just thinking, as you said that, David, if I'm an absentee landowner, I want to know that wherever I live, however far away it is, I want to know that person who is working my ground is going to be taking care of it. Mm-hmm. And putting that in a lease is probably not a bad idea at all.
That's right. Especially if they're going to have access to go into FSA or NRCS to sign up for conservation programs. Right. You know, if they've got access to do that, then they ought to be the one doing the ag water quality plan too. Because like we said before, that's part of that process.
So many times our actual producers have that FSA power of attorney where they're signing documents for those absentee landowners. And
right.
That'd be another thing I'd want them taken care of.
Yep.
Well, and not to muddy the water, but
pun intended. You know,
we've talked the majority of the time about from a farm perspective, which is what we wanted to talk about. But you know, I want to make sure that we say that water quality, it's all of us, whether you own a farm or not.
Oh, 100%.
And a lot of times we in a subdivision or places like that, you know, that is not something that those homeowners often think about is the water quality and things that they're doing that can affect the water quality for them and many others. And so, you know, just keep in mind, water quality is something that's very important to all of us and not just farmers. So if you're a listener and you're not farming, you know, water quality is also something that we all need to keep at the forefront and do our very best to do what we need to do.
Just not the farmer's responsibility, it's everybody's. I mean, you know, when you talk about pollution or anything like that, yeah. I mean, that's everybody. Whether it's throwing your trash out or going into storm drains and those are running into our water systems and, you know, all of that kind of stuff affects our water quality, any water quality, just not necessarily be ag water quality, but it's all water.
And from quality. A nutrient standpoint, our lawns and our gardens are the most over-fertilized areas that I see as an ag agent. I'm not picking on people, but when I see some of these soil tests come across my desk that are from a garden or a lawn, those are the ones that are really high sometimes on the soil test. Phosphorus.
Oh, yeah.
Are extremely high, and potassium for that matter, too. Yeah. And so just think about that, too, from a nutrient management standpoint.
Yeah. I'll have to, if y'all give me a minute here, I'll kind of get on the nutrient bandwagon. But, you know, a lot of the work I've been doing the last, I don't know, 5-6 years has been a bigger scale and thinking about the Mississippi River Basin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a big, big scale, and it's really hard for us to wrap our heads around. But, you know, every year in the summer, there is a dead zone that occurs in the Gulf of Mexico. And so all of, well, like 41% of the continental U.S., the lower 48, 41% of that land mass drains to the Gulf of Mexico. And so all of that area that drains is not just farmland, but it's large cities in the Midwest, industrial areas, small cities, towns, you know, all kinds of different land uses. And all of that drains to that one common location. So that's a watershed big on one scale. But you kind of walk that back up the Mississippi River and come into Kentucky and look at, you know, what is going on across the state. And you're absolutely right, Vicki. Every one of us plays a role in how we deal with the land and what our impact is. You know, one of my former colleagues says, if it's on the ground, it's in your water. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good statement. And it's true. Everything that is on the ground eventually will end up in our water. And it's not just in the Mississippi River and then on to the Gulf of Mexico, but our drinking water. You know, where does our drinking water come from? And I always like to challenge folks to you know, if do they even know? Do they know where their drinking water comes from? And do they know what kind of land uses are surrounding that source of their drinking water?
I used to know the percentage. I don't write offhand anymore, but the percentage of Kentuckians that get their drinking water from a groundwater source is pretty high. I don't remember the exact number, but it's a pretty good size number.
Yeah, I mean, and if it's not groundwater, it's surface water.
Or from a live water source,
Well, Kentucky's groundwater and surface water interacts so intricately. We've got so much karst geography, across the state. And so anything that's, you know, our surface water could go underground at any time, pop back out. And, you know, our municipal water systems, a lot of those are surface water. Mm-hmm. You know, some are pulling out of the Ohio River, the Kentucky River, the Green River.
Cumberland River.
The Cumberland River. Right, absolutely. So, you know, you kind of you look out on those water bodies and you think, gosh, how many people have impacted the water that's in there? Mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, how, what kind of quality is it? You know, and, you know, we're here in Lexington right now. Their eyes have all gotten big, y'all. And the same for, you know, of our students, too. And I tell them, like, if you're on campus at the University of Kentucky, you're drinking water out of the Kentucky River. Mm-hmm. And it started over in southeastern Kentucky. And by the time it has gotten to you, you know, there are several towns that have withdrawn that water out of the Kentucky River. They mm-hmm. have used it. They have flushed it. They have cleaned it a little, and then they've sent it back down the river.
Yep.
And so you, and that's just part of the water cycle. Mm-hmm. And I think we like to forget that we, you know, about what the actual, the reality of the water cycle mm-hmm. is. But just because you drink bottled water that may have been bottled, you know, a couple states away, that doesn't mean that you're not drinking something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's important for us to remember that we all are responsible and mm-hmm. for taking care of our water resources.
That's right.
I think that's a good place to move on into our timely tip. You know, every week at the end of our show, we like to wrap things up with a tip to remind producers and consumers of these products, something that might help them along their way. And our timely tip for this week is to update your ag water quality plan. And I'll go a step further, knowing that that this show is going to air on New Year's Day. Let's implement some of those ideas from our ag water quality plans. Ag water quality plan has been a law since 2001, like you say. We had several years where it was a suggestion before then. Now it is law, and we want to see folks not only doing the paperwork side of that law, but making sure that they update, keep that current relative to their operations, and be implementing those best management practices along the way.
Yep, so. Sounds great.
Anything Thanks, Jay. You need to add to that?
No, I just encourage folks to, use the Ag Water Quality Plan as a planning tool. You know, and think about how you can improve the practices on your farm and look for problem areas. Don't think of it as, you know, just a hassle or something else you have to do, but think of it as a way that you can make your farming operation better and easier for you, save time, save money, save your soil, you know, all those kind of things that are really going to benefit you in the long run, and not just you, but those who farm that ground after you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great advice for 2024.
Me too. So
that'll be here before we know it.
Yep.
Close, so. just 2 weeks away, actually.
That's right.
So, Amanda, we appreciate you being here today. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.